breaking news. The Raleigh Christmas Parade is canceled after a little girl died there last year. Hear from the family's lawyer about why they're disappointed about today's decision. Then a judge drastically raises the bond for the man accused of making threats with a gun on UNC's campus. What three other charges he's already facing from earlier this month. Plus, how the two recent lockdowns are causing some students to question how much time they spend on campus.
Crisp fall air is pushing in, starting now. Plunging dew points and cool mornings. When we'll feel the changes.
Well, how about this headline? This year's Raleigh Christmas Parade canceled. The city made the call after a little girl was hit and killed at last year's event. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dan Haggerty.
And I'm Ashley Rowe. Moments after the city announced the decision, the family of Haley Brooks responded, saying they disagree with the move.
WRAL's Aaron Thomas just wrapped up an interview with the attorney representing the Brooks family. Aaron, what did they say?
Yeah, Dan, attorney Jason Miller says that the Brooks family is disappointed over this decision that has canceled this Raleigh Christmas parade that usually lines part of Hillsborough Street behind me. He actually says and claims that the city did not reach out to the family before making this decision that would impact parade goers, business owners, and other participants in this parade. Looking now at your screen, you can see video from last year's Raleigh Christmas parade before tragedy struck. Attorney Jason Miller says that this is an event that Haley Brooks' family looked forward to attending every year. Since her death, her family has been vocal to lawmakers, pushing them for laws to prevent similar tragedies in the future. The lawyer for the family says the ideal call would have been enacting proper protections for this beloved event to continue.
I think the family had an expectation that 10 months after Haley's death, that the city would have taken the initiative to put some of these protocols in place. They're basic things. They really are. It's common sense. Let's make sure we have safe drivers, safe floats.
And he goes on to say, making sure things are, of course, safe for those participants and parade goers. Right now, you're looking at this memorial that remains in place since 11-year-old Haley Brooks tragically lost her life about 10 months ago. On our late news, we're going to continue our conversation with the family's lawyer, as well as the impact on local businesses. Yeah. Back to you.
Her death obviously rocked this community. Aaron, thank you for that report. The news today, though, very surprising, I think, for some folks. Mark Boyle joining us now in the WRAL Live Center. You heard from some city leaders about this, Mark.
We've heard from the mayor. One city council member actually was surprised completely when I asked him about it. We're also hearing from the Greater Raleigh Merchants Association talking about this parade. They helped put on the parade. It's a big deal for the city, the community. Take a listen.
All the students and youth that participate in dance performances and they practice tirelessly, you know, we really just wanted to use this as an opportunity to honor. That was our biggest thing that we wanted to do this year, was to bring it back, was just to honor and unite everyone.
So it's not going to happen this year, but the mayor does say she's hopeful the parade will be back again next year. Back to you.
Absolutely. Mark, thank you. A Montgomery County judge found probable cause that James Dunmore murdered his girlfriend, Alicia Watts, of Moore County. Dunmore was shackled and wearing a bulletproof vest before entering the courtroom. Seven different witnesses testified today. We learned that Dunmore overdosed on blood pressure medication back in July when he was attempting suicide. Moore County investigators said they used GPS data from phones and Watts's car to find her body. The medical examiner says her preliminary cause of death was strangulation.
Even though we didn't see the pictures, I didn't have to see the pictures, just listening to how she was found and where she was found was just heavy. No one, not even an animal, should be tossed out like that.
Dunmore's current wife, who separated from him last year, also gave emotional testimony. In May, she took out a restraining order when he threatened to kill her.
Two lockdowns in less than a month, right at the beginning of a new school year at UNC Chapel Hill. Today, students returned to the classroom after another incident on campus. They told WRAL's Destiny Patterson all of this is weighing heavily on campus.
If you walked around campus, it'd be hard to tell just how much these students have been through in the past few weeks. Students and staff bustle to their next class or activity, but still, there's an underlying heaviness weighing on the campus.
Try to not let it change things.
Emily Bissett is just trying to enjoy her senior year.
Another goal of mine for senior year had been to, like, spend more time on campus.
But now she says she's rethinking that.
Do I really want to be on campus when I don't need to be? Like, is that putting myself in more danger than I need to be?
Two separate lockdowns, university streets filled with police officers instead of students.
People came running into my classroom, and there was like several different people like just breaking down, crying, like having panic attacks.
So how do they cope? Freshman Sydney Norman says she doesn't quite have that answer.
I feel like it's not really like processing fully, because how is that supposed to process? Because this isn't what it should be.
Some students have taken to activism and social media.
Students are terrified of going to our schools.
No one expects this to happen at all, let alone twice.
Just like the stress that we've been under, just like emotionally since the first event, I'm sure like impacted people's reaction to that second event.
It's a weight that's pulling on both students and staff here, but there is help available. Students can come here to the campus health services building, or they can talk to a mental health professional, and that number is 919-966-3658. Destiny Patterson, WREL News in Chapel Hill.
Michael Harris, the suspect arrested after yesterday's lockdown at UNC Chapel Hill, appeared in court for the first time today. He faces six charges, three of them from yesterday, including possession of a gun on school property, assault, and communicating threats. The three other charges are from a road rage incident earlier this month. The prosecutor says Harris's actions show a dangerous pattern.
The escalation of dangerous behavior in the very recent several weeks exhibited by the separate offenses that are before you today.
The judge increased Harris's bond five times the original amount, citing how serious the charges are. It's now at $50,000. If Harris makes that bond, he'll have to wear an ankle monitor.
We are digging a bit deeper on the recent lockdowns at UNC. Of course, it's a problem that affects more than just Chapel Hill. What we can do to protect students, and what did the study show about gun crimes? We're going to go in depth just ahead.
Plus, a UNC professor who graduated from the university shares his perspective on the lockdowns after he experienced a similar situation on campus back in 1995. Kat?
It's a beautiful evening outside, but tomorrow evening is going to be even better. I'll explain why just ahead.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Haggerty. This is In Depth. And as always, I want to hear your thoughts on these stories. Email me at dan@wrl.com, because tonight we are talking about guns, UNC, and Tim Moore. The House Speaker weighed in on the two gun-related lockdowns in the first 3 weeks of school at UNC, which is a gun-free campus. And he thinks that that fact is contributing to the problem. This was his take on it earlier today.
You're not just going to snap your fingers and get rid of guns. That's not reality. Criminals are going to have guns. And the best deterrent against a criminal with a gun is a good guy with a gun.
Now, let's keep in mind here, it is a felony to have a gun on the campus at UNC. That applies to everyone except for police officers. I mean, even if you legally purchased a gun, had the thorough background check, you got a concealed carry permit, you aced the test to get it, it still does not matter. If you are packing on campus, it's a felony. Now, I'm not going to get into the whole good guy with a gun, bad guy with a gun debate, perhaps another night, but I would like to elaborate on something else that Moore said, that, quote, criminals are going to have guns. You see, in 2004, the government, they partnered with John Hopkins, and they interviewed inmates, and they asked them where they got the guns that they used in their crimes, and between 60 and 65% admitted they used illegal guns. Only 13% purchased the guns legally from a store or a pawn shop. The University of Chicago, they did a similar study. They interviewed 70 inmates who all used guns in their crimes, and only two of them, out of the 70, got them from a store. So in that case, Moore is exactly right. Criminals have proven that they can find a gun illegally, making the next question, where do they get them? Well, earlier this year, the ATF released the most thorough report that they have released on gun crimes in the last 20 years and found that 54% of gun crimes are committed with guns that were once purchased legally before then changing hands, sometimes several times. And between 2017 and 2021, more than 1 million legally purchased guns were stolen from private citizens. So, yes, bad guys will have guns. But according to the data, often they're getting them from the good guys. So what's the move? Student activists, they want lawmakers to make it harder for everyone to buy a gun. They marched on the Raleigh Capitol in this week. We were covering it earlier before everything went down at UNC. Meanwhile, students on campus are looking at the university. They want leadership there to do more. Here's a conversation I had with a freshman about feeling safe at UNC.
It's up to them to rebuild it for us so we can like have a safe experience and feel safe learning. But at the end of the day, I feel like that's all we really can do, just trust that they're going to take the appropriate measures so that next time this doesn't happen.
Is there a sense of hopelessness in that, though? Because what are those appropriate measures? It is illegal to have a gun on the campus, so that's already a felony. What steps need to be taken? Is it clear backpacks? Is it metal detectors? Do people need to be searched when they go into buildings? What would make you feel as though the university was taking the right steps?
That's the thing. I have absolutely no idea, which is what I feel like makes it so scary, and it kind of makes you wonder, well, you know, what is it going to happen next? Because if I can't think of it, maybe they're also not thinking of it. So it kind of almost feels like a lose-lose situation.
And that's sort of the rub with this thing. How do we balance safety with our freedoms, in this case, to reasonably move about a public campus? Here's the balance they found in Johnston County, the schools there this year. Weapons detection systems. They also have armed officers at the entrance, kids emptying their bags, holding their computers over their heads, and getting searched anytime that software pings something, which many times is just a metal water bottle, not a gun or a weapon. Innocent kids being searched by police at school. They got the idea from schools in Charlotte that were seeing tons of success. Schools where they found guns on campus the year before, and then they found zero guns after the tech was installed. But keep in mind, these systems are also going into schools that have no history of guns or shootings or even violence. What's the cost of that with our kids? Fortifying a place that they've always seen as safe, like it's a jail. What will be their impression of reasonable safety measures when we're done raising them? I know I just threw a ton at you. This is a really big topic, one of the biggest topics. Let's explore it together. Tell me your thoughts, ask questions, be curious here. Tell me what's on your mind, and we'll go in depth.
And UNC Chapel Hill has dealt with gun violence before. Back in 1995, Wendell Williamson opened fire near campus, walking down Henderson Street, spraying bullets. Two people died, including a student. A police officer was hurt as well. Now, a lot has changed in the 28 years since. Ryan Thornburg, the man to my left, was a UNC Chapel Hill student then. Today, you are a professor. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you've got a unique perspective. You were on campus back in 1995 at UNC Chapel Hill as a student. You're back there now. What was it like then, and how does that compare to today?
Well, you know, I've obviously changed. I was a student back then, and it was a lot easier being a student than a professor. You know, when you're a student, you're there as a journalist, as a young journalist, you're interested in running towards the story, hearing what's going on. And as a professor, that you don't have that option. You know, you've got to be there to take care of your students, and you're the last line of defense, and that's not the better place to be.
Yeah, and you're a leader, and you're trying to help these students navigate this situation, which has now happened twice, two different scenarios,
sure.
But, you know, guns on campus. How do you guide them through this?
Well, they don't need a lot of guidance. I mean, these are smart kids, and they were incredibly calm and courageous during these times. But they have a lot of questions about, you know, is it safe to be here? Do I want to be here? Is this the environment that I want to grow up in? Do I want to raise my family in this kind of environment? And so we have to have conversations about, you know, what is the personal responsibility and what is kind of communal responsibility, and how do we navigate this? A lot of students are nervous, but they want to learn. And it's really hard to learn when you're anxious.
And also when there are no clear answers in front of us, I don't think. Something that struck me as I was learning more about you and your experience and your perspective is back in 1995, we didn't have social media. We didn't have students able to go to radio scanners, able to hear the police responding and posting on social media and creating that immediate cycle of information and sometimes misinformation. I mean, just talk about the difference between then and now.
Well, sure. I mean, that's just totally different. You know, back when I was a student, I was trying to dial on a payphone and try to figure out what's going on. But I was a lot less nervous, too. You know, I think that students during both of these lockdowns, what they really want is clear information, clear, transparent information. And I got to say, WREL is what we were watching in our classroom with the caption on. So they had some sense of what was happening outside of our windowless room. And students were hearing from around campus, and we had a chance to talk about, well, where did you hear that from? Is that reliable information? And so I think they're becoming more savvy. But at the same time, the other day when we had our lockdown, it was a student who first alerted me, and she said, Professor Thornburg, could you please lock the doors? I think there might be something going on.
Wow.
Now, that you stop that in the middle of teaching.
Oh, that's heart-stopping.
It is.
Yeah, so scary. There's a lot of talk with the university administration and also a buzz on campus within the campus community about kind of where do we go from here? What's your take on that?
Well, I think that's there needs to be a communal decision, and this is a reckoning that, and the choices that we've made at the policy level, at the state and national level. And so knowing that those choices are where they are and unlikely to change soon, I think all of us individually have to make our decisions. Is this what we want to do, and how do we keep our kids safe? And is part of our job, do we want to do a job when part of it is to bar doors and tell kids to get under the desks? Yeah. I don't think so.
You heard Dan talk about what's going on in Johnston County Public Schools, where they've got metal detectors, essentially. I spoke with a student at UNC, actually a journalism student who's on exchange there, and he said, I want to see metal detectors. I want to make sure that there are not guns on campus. Do you think that that could ever be a reality?
I sure hope not. I mean, I remember going to high school, and we had violence at our high school, and they put up a gate, and it just changes the tenor. And that, you know, we send these students, we've built this beautiful campus to be open and to have students be safe in ideas and physically safe, you know. I sure hope we don't have that kind of, like, hardened campus.
Yeah.
But everybody I know, different things make different people feel safe.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Professor Ryan Thornburg, for joining us here tonight. Really appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
All right.
All right, thanks to both of you. We appreciate the guests coming in tonight. These are heavy topics, but, you know, we can let the weather lighten our mood a little bit because we have absolutely gorgeous weather for the weekend up ahead.
And, you know, I think everybody needs it. It's just going to be beautiful this weekend. You can step outside. You can get some fresh air. It's nice outside tonight. I mean, check out Dick's Park. A lot of people out here at the Food and Wine Festival happening. What a great weekend for the event. And in Durham, a stunning sunset over the DBAP where they are playing baseball. It's their last week in town. Fayetteville, 82 degrees at this hour. It's going to be feeling even better tomorrow. Why? The air will be drier, and that's what gives it the crisp fall feel. We're already seeing that out there tonight, but we continue to dry out tonight. We're going to see dew points in the 50s for everyone tomorrow throughout the day. And with a north wind, you know, that crisp air with a little bit of a breeze outside sunshine, it's just going to be a stunning day. A little cooler than it was today as well, and we have this nice, comfortable dry air sticking around into the start of the weekend as well. So it's a great weekend to get outside, get some fresh air. 80 the high on Friday, still warm during the afternoons, 86 degrees on Saturday, mostly sunny. As we get into Sunday, we are going to have the chance of an isolated storm returning. I encourage you, check in for an update tomorrow on the rain coverage and timing. That's when we'll get in the high-resolution model data. Just be prepared. There could be a stray storm Sunday afternoon. At this point, you don't have to cancel plans entirely for it. Just be prepared to dodge some rain, some quick rain inside. Tomorrow morning, breakfast time, temperatures are in the upper 50s to lower 60s. By lunchtime, 75 degrees, full sunshine. It's going to be a great day to take your lunch outside. You know, teachers, if you can let your students eat lunch outside, do class outside, should be a great day for that. And dinner time temperatures are in the mid to upper 70s if you want to grill out. Football Friday, the forecast just couldn't be better, especially given, you know, all the hot Fridays that the students have had to play football in. It's going to be really comfortable out on the bleachers or playing on the field tomorrow night. Temperatures in the mid 70s at kickoff. As you are leaving the game, temperatures should be in the mid 60s. So if you get chilly easily, you may want to bring a hoodie. You may just want to bring a hoodie to cozy up and make it feel a little bit more like fall. We also have the St. Jude Walk and Run happening on Saturday. Sunny skies, low humidity, comfortable temperatures. Should be really nice out there for the 5K. And last I checked, St. Jude is about 3/4 of the way to their fundraising goal. They still have a couple days left to do it. So if you're interested in participating, head to their website and get signed up. Our tropical outlook on satellite showing our next system that we're going to be watching. We're actually surprised that this did not develop into a tropical depression. With a 5 o'clock advisory, it's possible by 11 o'clock tonight, this would be our next tropical depression. Or Tropical Storm Nigel. At this point, most models are keeping it out to sea, most of the ensembles as well, but this is a long ways away. Generally, it's headed to the northwest toward Bermuda. We'll keep an eye on the steering currents to ensure that a trough does swing in and keep it out to sea. Just check in for updates over the next week. Our 7-day forecast looks pretty great. We've got that chance for rain on Sunday late in the day. Other than that, it's mainly dry weather. Some comfortable nights ahead. We fall in the 50s tonight. We're even down to 53 Saturday morning. It's going to be brief, so if you're a fan of the cooler weather, you may want to wake up early for a walk. Next week, the humidity looks pretty comfortable as well.
Bust out the sweatshirts. I'm ready. All right. Thanks, Kat.
Up next, the discussion in Cary to build hundreds of apartments and a hotel all in one development. Athens Drive High School students will return to class tomorrow. They dismissed early today because of a power outage. Students got out at 10:30. Duke Energy worked on it all day, eventually fixing the underground line. Still, after school activities were canceled. In the meantime, Apex Friendship and Millbrook High Schools were closed today because of air conditioning problems.
More apartments and development could be coming to Cary. Town Council meeting right now. One of the agenda items is a public hearing for a proposed development on Green Level West Road. The developer wants to build 1,300 apartment units there. They also want to build a hotel with 150 rooms, plus a couple hundred thousand square feet of office space and room for retail, a little bit of everything. Council is not expected to vote tonight. They could take it up in their next meeting.
State regulators see a need for more nursing facilities in Wake County. NCDHHS approved three projects that will add a total of 360 nursing beds to the county. All three projects are under construction. Health officials project Wake will be the only county in the state without enough nursing care space by 2026.
Wow, a lot of growth here. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, making WRAL your choice for local news.
Our next newscast is at 10 on Fox 50 and 11 on WRAL. Have a great night.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.